there, Wild One. Have you ever built something that changed how you think, only to watch the world shift so fast you had to rebuild again? This isn't a story about innovation in a boardroom. It's about the kind that happens at the kitchen table, on the back of a napkin, in between babies and burnouts. The kind of innovation that wakes you up, rewires how you live, and reshapes what you pass down. Today, I'm bringing you into a conversation that changed not only how I think, but how I live and lead. Aaron Peretti is one of my closest collaborators, the person who helped shape some of the most powerful professional work that I've ever been a part of. We're pulling back the curtain today on innovation, what it looks like in real life, how we built the tools that we still use today, and why we both walked away from traditional consulting to do something way more personal. Reclaim your rhythm. Rethink the rules. Rewrite your life. This is Wildly Intentional, the show where we question the scripts we've inherited and build a life, family, and legacy on purpose. If you're done living on autopilot, come with a curious mind and a courageous heart. Here, we talk about what it means to question, unlearn, create, and build what truly matters. I'm your host, Mandy, maverick mom of three, maker, family culture builder, lifelong question asker, and the friend people call when they're ready to rethink, well, everything. I'm here to shake the norms, tell the truth, and light the way forward. Hey, Wild One, welcome back to Wildly Intentional. This episode is a part of Unrule the World, where we break free from outdated systems and rethink what life can look like when we stop living on autopilot. And today, we're discussing our journey, one that shaped almost everything I've done professionally. It's not just about innovation in theory. It's about innovation in real life. And it's personal, because the person joining me today isn't just a guest. He's a longtime collaborator and a dear friend of mine who has helped me shape some of the most transformative work that I've done. We're going behind the scenes of what it really looked like to build a business that challenged default thinking, create tools that sparked light bulb moments, and navigate the messy, real-life shifts that come. I'm joined by someone who's walked alongside me through every twist and turn. Aaron Peretti is one of my closest collaborators, and he's the co-creator of frameworks like Quest, Guide, and Innovation Strengths. He's the author of Today's Innovator, Becoming Today's Innovator, and Your Quest Awaits. And he's an innovation and AI strategist with over 20 years of experience leading change in complex organizations. Aaron previously served as the Chief Innovation Officer and the Chief Customer Advocate at Transamerica, and now he speaks internationally on AI, disruption, and systems thinking. He currently sits on several nonprofit boards and leads Shout Camp, helping summer camps future-proof their missions. But most importantly, he's someone who's always believed in questioning the norm and building what comes next. Together, we helped people think differently, from boardrooms to backyard brainstorms. And then we both walked away. He retired at 40. I had babies and I built programs with a breast pump in my bag, but we never stopped creating together because our work had evolved. This wasn't just about leading innovation at work. It was about living it in real life. Today's episode is sponsored by Today's Innovator, the company that Aaron and I co-founded to help people lead meaningful change through practical, powerful innovation tools. And that's exactly what we're unpacking in this episode. We're talking about what we built, what we walked away from, and where we're headed next. We're pulling back the curtain and how we're still choosing innovation every single day, just not the way the world taught us. Let's dive in. Aaron, thanks for joining on the podcast today.
Yeah, I'm excited to join you.
All right. Well, let's rewind, Aaron. I want to kind of start with how you and I met and how we ended up building a whole company together in multiple frameworks.
Yeah, I certainly would not have expected all of the things we would build based on our first meeting, but you did leave quite an impression upon me in that meeting. You walked in with a list of maybe 100 different things that you thought were wrong with the environment that we were in. It was right there that I recognized that you had an agitator within you. And I mean that with all due respect. You know, the type of agitation which challenges the conventional thinking. It wasn't just a frustration. it was a recognition that there was so much more potential to have meaningful interactions inside of this what was essentially a toxic environment that we were in. So I appreciated that in you from day one. And from there, I think we just kind of followed the paths of our lives and kept coming back together. And everything seemed to make sense every time we got back together. And here we are today, having built a whole bunch of different things that I'm very proud of. And I think you are too.
Absolutely. I think we kind of define the yin and the yang, right? Like, you were high up in the organization. I was a frontline employee at the time. We're very quantitative in your thinking, and you have a math background. I definitely do not. I am more of a marketer and more of a talker. Even that said, like, you were more, I think, quiet, but like forced to be in a more social, extroverted role within the organization. Any other fun differences about us?
You know, our backgrounds are very, very different, right? I'm from the East Coast, fast-paced, always looking to drive change externally, and you're very Midwest, slower pace of change.
Yep.
Very anchored in how you were up, your upbringing and how you were raised. And, you know, those are two very different dynamics, but they fit well together, to your point.
Yeah. So this whole yin and yang, and even I think we saw it a lot in the organization, where like you were very visionary for the organization. And I was very like, okay, here's what he said. Here's what we need to do, right? Like, I was more of a tactical thinker and helping people figure out how to do the things that you were going around the organization saying. And so I think that is just, and even now today, like when we facilitate or work with people, you're very good at laying things out, and I'm very good at like unpacking them with the people. So I think we play off each other, and we have played off each other pretty well for over a decade now.
Yeah, I like to describe that as I think top down, you think bottoms up. And we often meet in the middle, and it's wild when that happens.
For sure. One thing I really appreciated about you as a leader at that organization was you did these like leadership lessons where you really helped people unpack ways to be a leader at any stage in the organization. I just remember those leadership lessons you gave being like very impactful for every layer of the organization. And I think that is actually how we started to crack the nut between us. I remember you had me proofread a blog for you, and it started with like there were three quantum physics analyses in it. And I wrote back to you that was 2.5 too many. And then I think that's when trust really started to build between us. And I don't know, I think you've just been it's been so great because you've always been so personable and open in the organization and just in life. But based on your status in the organization, right, as a suit or a C-suite employee, you got a lot of turkey nods and a lot of people that were more intimidated to approach you. And you know that was never me. So,
yeah, I was growing a lot as a leader and as a human. At that time, like you said, I was in a highly visible role in that organization, and it's not something that I had trained for. I don't have a business background. I wasn't that much into leadership at that time, although I was drinking from the fire hose and learning a lot of leadership lessons myself, and I was learning how to influence, and that influence was at many different levels. It was influencing the department that I led, but also influencing my peers and influencing up to make strategic decisions within that organization. So a wild era of growth for me that you met me in, and I'm glad that I had you as an anchor along the way, because I can just go in a direction that no one follows very quickly, and you always pulled me back and grounded me to what people really wanted to hear and what they were interested in.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I started with you when your team was 5 people, and then you built it up to how many?
Yeah, I like to say the original charge was to change the culture of innovation with a team of 3, which is where I started. To change the culture of 6,000 employees with a team of 3. That's where I started. And you were kind of the next wave, the next 2.
Yep.
And then eventually, I believe it capped out at maybe 120 different people in this department that were all tasked with driving change, and I like to say driving meaningful change, and you included that in the intro about me as well. So this intentionality, and you talk about this on this podcast as well, but being very intentional with how we drive change and why we're driving the change, that's rare to have people and to have a whole department in this case that is oriented towards doing things with intention in a way that'll persevere and last, but still be responsive and nimble and agile. That was what we were charged with. And, you know, I look back upon that time fondly and thought we did a great job with it.
I think it was only good memories for everybody involved on our side of the equation anyways, for a while there. But I think you shifted my thinking from the very first day I reported to you. When I was in the marketing department talking to you to the meeting that you alluded to at the beginning, I don't know if you remember this, but like I almost didn't get the job with you because I hadn't been with the organization for a year. And you told me that I wasn't going to be able to get the job. And I was like, then you can start by innovating and challenging the status quo by like recommending me for this position because I have so much energy because I haven't been here for a year. Do you remember that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't remember what the exact rule was, but maybe you had to be in your position for a year or something like that before you could look for a new role. And yeah, it was empowering to challenge that and to recognize that a rule like that, while it had a certain intent, the effect of the rule was limiting, right? It limited the potential of the organization. So in fact, it was pretty easy to challenge on that premise. That if we challenge the rule, the organization will be better off. And for sure, that turned out to be the case.
Because I think you probably know stats and about like people in organizations less than a year have more energy and ideas and momentum because they're seeing everything so fresh. And so, yeah, to be able to challenge that right out of the gates was good. I mean, I was honestly on the verge of quitting. I would have probably left the organization completely if I couldn't have joined your team. So I am forever grateful that you challenged that rule and brought me on board with you.
Well, I am too.
But to kind of get back to this, like my first day, I remember we flew to Dallas and then I flew from Dallas to Baltimore with my boss to see you. And I was so excited. I was like, I am now on an innovation team. Nobody even knows what that is. I was totally in the Skittles and rainbows phase of innovation and what this means. I was just hot to trot. I walked into your office and was like, hey, I made it here. Like, we're doing this. And you're like, yep, only 546 business days until I quit corporate America. And I think my jaw could have hit the floor. Like, I felt like I made a move that was a secure move, a move that was going to take care of me for a while, like the corporate dream, if you will, like this is going to be my path. And you looked at me dead in the eyes after you showed me your calendar and were like, if you do your job well, you will not have it in 2 years.
Yeah, that was the reality. Well, that often is the reality of those who are tasked with driving change is if you do your job well, you're not needed any longer. And so I had that recognition, and the countdown clock was a different animal entirely, but it gave me this horizon that I was looking towards. We can talk about where that countdown clock came from, but I will kind of stress that when you're driving change or when you're, and I see this a lot with nonprofits, in fact, when you have a mission and you're mission driven, you should have the expectation that you will achieve your mission and not always just be focused on doing the same work in perpetuity. So I'm glad that kind of resonated with you. My goal was to achieve the mission. And once the mission is achieved, maybe certainly we would find a new mission, but it wouldn't be the same. And so there had to be this recognition that we are going to get this work done. And then there's probably another frontier past that. But when you're moving to a space of ambiguity, there's no way of knowing what that next space would even be. I'm glad you appreciated that lesson. I know you didn't at the time, but
not initially. Yeah, not initially. Now I do. And I'm like, that is so smart to work yourself out of a position and to train, like, you know, teaching other people how to fish. And it frees you up to continue to be creative, to continue to build. And, you know, that's what we love to do. And so now I look at that, I'm like, I love that. And I approach all jobs now with that. Like, hey, if I do this right, I won't have to do it ever again, which is so great. But you look at like the status quo and like how a lot of people grew up and what their idea of the corporate job is. And it's to just keep going along to get along until retirement, you know? And it's like, how boring. You could free yourself up. And I think too, that's where in the organization, I got to this place of let's best practice share instead of information hoard. Because information hoarding might make you feel this job security, but like it's not great for the organization. It's not great for your coworkers, and it really will stifle you professionally. So information share and move on. Like keep building, keep growing. And as we used to say in the organization, coach up or coach out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And business systems aren't always designed well for that type of information sharing. Certainly in our client work, we've heard a lot of talk about silos, organizational silos, and they're often described in a very negative light. Someone will say we're very siloed or they're very siloed, talking about some other part of the organization. I always had this recognition that silos are a good thing. They nurture expertise and they nurture a common identity for the group that's part of that silo. But it requires people like you and me who have different types of roles who are able to look across the top of the silos for the connections that need to happen. So having that matrix of depth and expertise, which often is described as silos, combined with the breadth of the ability to communicate across the top of the silos, that's where the real magic can come from in an organization, is having both the expertise and the breadth to be able to communicate quickly across the organization. So we were facilitating that.
It
was exciting.
You did a great job connecting with your peers at those upper levels across the organization and down. And I think that's what people looked up to you about the most was to your point, the depth and breadth of the relationships that you were forming. And you surrounded yourself with the right people to make the initiative happen.
Yeah, it was that or concede that I wasn't cut out for corporate America. And to go back to the countdown clock, I think when I was 23 years old and had my first corporate job, I recognized that a corporate organizational system is not one that I want to be part of the rest of my life. There's a lot of frustration that comes with it. There's a lot of egos. There's a lot of hidden agendas. There's a lot of politics. I learned to love the politics, but some of the other pieces I never learned to love. So I kind of at age 23 said, I want to escape this system so that I can focus on who I want to be in this world and the real impact I want to have in this world. But I recognized just how financially rewarding it would be to stay in the corporate system and play the political game. So I set this deadline for myself by age 40. To escape the corporate gravity, as I described it. And so you came across me where I had about, I know that at about 700 or 800 days, I'd built a countdown. And it was business days. So every day that I opened my computer, I saw one less day. And you saw that and I showed it to you and I was very proud
of
it. But I think, in some cases it scared people. And ultimately, in retrospect, I think you get it, right? I wasn't fit for the system I was in. I was looking for an escape from that system. And I knew that I had to do that and design something better. And I'm glad that you've been a part of that since, when we did escape that gravity, we started to design something better.
And so I think, Aaron, like you escaped it in a much more strategic way, right? Like I was in the thick of motherhood. I still am in the thick of motherhood. I escaped it just out of pure, like, this is soul sucking and I don't have another option, but I'm not going to keep doing this. I think you approached it in a much more strategic way. So would you be willing to share, like, how did you go about like backing off of that or getting out of it? Like what steps did you take to create a path to be done by 40? Like when I tell people that you retired at 40, they're like, holy cow, how did he do that? And the reality is like we were at very different levels of the organization, right? Like your paycheck far surpassed mine. So like you were able to do that, but you also put yourself in these situations. How?
Well, let me start by clarifying. Retirement probably isn't the best word to use to describe it because I'm now as busy as I ever was in the corporate world. I retired from the corporate political environment, right? That's what I escaped. And
retirement could be a whole nother episode on systems
absolutely.
That we could do.
We could talk about that. The discipline required was, in hindsight, it wasn't perfect reasoning because I did sacrifice a lot of things and I made a lot of trade-offs. But it was this intense focus on personal financial freedom and ensuring that I wasn't spending frivolously outside of work, ensuring that I wasn't bogging myself down in a lot of debt so that I could save. and maxing out all of the saving instruments that all of the organizations that I've ever worked for had offered me, whether that's a 401k match or stock purchase plans, all of that stuff. You know, at age 23, I built that financial forecast and I said, you know what, I think if I have this modest growth in my career progression and modest growth resulting, a resultant growth in my salary, and if costs grow like this and my house payments grow like this, I think I could escape this corporate gravity by age 40. And then every year or two, I would update that plan and recognize I'm getting there, right? I would just tweak the assumptions a little bit, but I was always gaining ground. Now, I will share that I was fortunate to have my wife, who worked in another corporate system, who was very successful in her own right, and that allowed me to have a little bit more comfort than the average person, both financially and from a risk-taking perspective. So I was a little privileged in that sense, but that was all part of the equation as well, and it had to be part of the discipline, is recognizing her role in achieving that dream as well.
For sure. I guess before we move on to what we've built, Aaron, I know there are so many people that are just fed up. Like they're exhausted with the corporate grind. And just with you, your corporate quote retirement, I get what you're saying, but could you give listeners that feel this in corporate America right now, like the top 3 to 5 things that you would do if you were in their shoes right now? Say they were somebody like me that hasn't had the strategic plan or this epiphany from age 23, and I'm going to be done at 40. Maybe for them, it's 50 or just getting to the next thing. What would you recommend to people that are doing the 8 to 5 or the 9 to 5 or in that grind right now? What would you recommend that they do to start to get out of that system into something more rewarding or aligned with them?
Great question. The first lesson is a universal lesson when you're trying to drive change, and that's to start with a vision that is both aspirational and attainable. So the reason I did all of that background, you know, building out my financial forecast was to make sure that my aspiration was indeed attainable. And many people may feel defeated that their aspiration is to escape the corporate gravity, but they don't know how to attain that. To your point, you know, you were asking questions around how I did it. Well, I did the work. I built the model to see whether or not I could actually get to that point. So start with that vision of the future. What are you actually trying to accomplish by when? And then check to see if it's attainable. And if it's not, reset your expectations. But never give up the dream, right, of becoming truly an agent of your own devices, right? And changing your own outcomes. None of us feel fulfilled and satisfied being at the whim of a system, right? Being a pawn in the game. But sometimes that's unavoidable. The way to escape that is to start with that vision and just start with that dream and then start working your way there. But then it's the discipline as well. So recognizing I had to move up in the organization. So I had to grow as an individual. What got me here is not what's going to get me to the next level. So I was always challenging myself to learn new things, take bold risks, put myself out there. And I think one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was from the executive vice president at my very first job. And it was 2 words. He said, make offers. And in that, there's just so much brilliance, which only in retrospect is it really clear to me how much power is there. But when you see something that you want to be a part of, make an offer to add value to that thing. And even if you're overwhelmed with your current job, if you go to your boss and say, hey, there's this great project that's going on in that other team, I've got some good skills. Do you think they would allow me to come in and help tell the story? All right, make that sort of offer. What's the worst that's going to happen in that case is someone will say no, but then they'll recognize that you have initiative, right? That's the worst thing that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing that can happen is they say yes. And then you're a little overwhelmed because you're taking on new work. And what I find is that over the course of about 6 months, if you really enjoy that thing that you made an offer to be a part of, you start to gravitate to that thing. So I remember developing skills in market research because I made the offer, hey, can I design that survey? Can I write the questions? Can I do the analysis in the back end? And I learned the skills as a result. And it was always kind of 1 degree outside of my current comfort zone. And it was something I was interested in and always moving forward.
Yeah, you've preached that. I mean, the whole time I've been with you professionally, you've said make offers. And I've taken that advice from you many times. And I think making offers oftentimes leads to making your own position, because a lot of the positions that I've held weren't jobs that I've applied for. They were positions that have been created because, to your point, I've made an offer.
Yeah, same here. I had a chance several times to write my own job description because mm-hmm. I was moving into a space that was a big problem area for an organization. And they essentially gave me the keys and said, figure this out, you know, drive this to a new place. And that always started with, okay, well, what does the leader need to look like? Let me draw that job description up.
Yeah. So you left at 40, and then what did you go do?
The first thing I did was reconnect with family. I became a soccer coach. I don't know if you remember that, for about a year.
I do.
I coached soccer, and it grounded me in real perspective about things that were more important than the corporate world. And I needed that. I needed that time. After that, I had a chance to be the project manager on a cross-country move. My wife's job shifted, and we moved 6 states east, back to the East Coast from Colorado. And it was just a chance to flex some mental muscle that I hadn't while coaching soccer, to coordinate all the chaos of a cross-country move while she was still working. And that, you'll probably remember, on the other end of that, I started to get a little stuck. And you and I had been talking, kind of coaching each other through this post-corporate time, whether it was informal or formal at that time, I can't remember. I think it was very informal.
Yeah.
And there was this calling to write a book that I was experiencing. And eventually I found the avenue to do that. And a publisher came into my life and I started to write Today's Innovator. A funny story about Today's Innovator, the reason that was the name of the book was because that was the URL that was cheap and available. So, but in hindsight, you know, that really is kind of the essence of still my own personal brand, is driving change is the skills you need, the tools you need are always evolving. So you can't be yesterday's innovator. You are always just on the cusp of what's possible today. You can be looking towards the future, but that's uncertain. So I started to recognize that as we wrote that book, and you really coached me through that process, that all fell a little bit flat. I don't know if you remember, there, you know, the book didn't set the world on fire, but
right.
It was a really kind of validating moment for me to say, all right, I've done a lot in my career. I've put it all down on paper, and now I have this out in the world and people can see that, you know, I've accomplished things. And that was useful. So it was really useful in that respect. And it allowed me to move on to the next thing.
That's how I perceived it from you, was like, you just needed to kind of put a bow on your career and like kind of timestamp that piece of your, I mean, I think that's a monster accomplishment that you did. Like, you set a goal to be done at 40. You did it. And you inspired thousands of employees with that message and your leadership. And to put all of that into a book, a tangible thing that can sit on a shelf and live on, I thought was very admirable. I loved helping you through that process. And then it has kind of evolved. Like, I remember you were under the publishing deadline, finishing it up, and the last chapter you just kind of threw out there. And then you called me pissed that that should have been the whole book, but now you're under the deadline.
Book.
And then fast forward, like, what, 4, 6, 8 years later, and then we made that book.
Yeah.
The Becoming Today's Innovator, about the strengths. Do you want to talk about that? Like, that's such a monster epiphany. And then it just kind of sat there and ate at you for years until I think we spent a couple of years flushing that out.
Yeah, I think the exercise of making sense of all the lessons that I had learned and putting that into the first 3 parts of the book led me directly to the so what, right? And that was the piece that was missing. While I was writing the first 3 parts, they were very detailed, very rigorous. It was my expertise. I was in my comfort zone. But there had to be a payoff in the book, and it was the so what. And because the book was titled Today's Innovator, you helped me through this, put together this section. It was called A Profile of Today's Innovator. And so it was really the culmination of all of this sense-making activity so that the reader would say, great, you've given me all of these lessons. How do I act differently? And that's what that fourth part was. And it was the recipe for being a dynamic leader of innovation. And it morphed a lot after that because, you know, that first pass through, it was messy. It was just a first pass. It lacked depth of thinking, but there was always something there. That was the, mm-hmm. that was the point where this should have been the whole book. I should have spent a year on this content. Instead, I spent a week on it. But I'm glad that you had the patience to work on that with me over the years that followed and really to refine it and get it to a place where it's in my nature now. And it's the ability to toggle through these various strengths and personas is something that, you know, I don't take lightly because it was years of development.
Yeah. And so we have developed the book now, Becoming Today's Innovator. So Aaron published the book, Today's Innovator, which was kind of the culmination of his corporate career. And then it ended with that. And then to his point, we spent years going through what are the roles? And that's where we launched the Becoming Today's Innovator workbook. Do you want to talk about the roles a little bit and like what that is, just really high level?
Yeah, at the highest level, there's this recognition that an organization doesn't always need you to be you. Sometimes it needs you to play a role, particularly when you're driving change in an organization. It isn't always enough to have your resting state, right? Sometimes you need to be a little bit agitated. Sometimes you need to challenge the system. Sometimes you need to stop and pause and reflect and architect a new environment, right? So Becoming Today's Innovator is an attempt at giving people the language to shift their own role dynamically and recognize that it's okay to do that. So you can show up some days as an expert and to continue to nurture your expertise, but other days you're going to be required to be a connector and you have to leave your expert behind and you have to look outward and try to learn about new things and to meet new people, to connect people and ideas. So the roles kind of play together that way, where each one is in a different domain, and then they have kind of complementary focused profiles or roles that you can choose to play. And it's this, I think you used this word once, this dance, the kind of cosmic dance of how do you bounce between these roles to affect the change that you want to drive. And it's never enough to just be the expert. It's never enough to just be the project manager, the initiator, right? You always have to assume other perspectives and other skill set.
Yeah. And how I describe it too is like, unlike like StrengthsFinder, right? Where it's like, these are the five that you are. These are the eight things that all innovators have to embody in some way, shape, or form. And it's just, you have to ask yourself before you go into a meeting or before you go into work or before you go into a conversation, how do I need to show up to this? Like, what is my role in this today? And to your point, sometimes it's going to be, I need to agitate. Other times it's going to be, I need to get it done, the initiator, right? Or I need to make a connection, or I need to do this. And so the book really focused on what are the eight roles? What are these people thinking? What are they saying? How are they making these approaches? What does this look like in the wild? And it's really a workbook. And I mean, it's something that we designed to go through it over and over again. And then we even had levels of like, you know, if this was your first attempt going through this, you know, here's how like an entry level person would do it. And then here's how like an advanced person would do it. Because even as you spoke about, Aaron, like you've grown a lot through this. And so the book is one that's meant to really help you go through it over and over again. And again, it's called Becoming Today's Innovator, and it's a workbook. I just want to get back to two, Aaron, like today's innovator values the company, not the book. We value flexibility. Working together. Like our working relationship is very much like it has to work for us. And we're constantly reevaluating it and talking about projects that we're working on and conversations that we're having and everything in real time. Like we're doing retrospectives, if you will, on the fly all the time. So there's never really surprises or things coming up. But that is why these have taken us a couple of years, is because it hasn't been like our primary focus. Nose down, getting this done. Like it's allowed you to do summer camps and shout camp and to explore different avenues. It's allowed me to homeschool, to be a stay-at-home mom. So that's one thing that I love is we spent so much time on like, what is this company's values? And today's innovators values very highly flexibility and like just-in-time delivery. And that has been a way that I've shifted my life. But I don't know if there's anything additional you'd like to say about today's innovator, the company, or the values that we hold, or...
Yeah, values work wasn't something I got exposure to until very late in my corporate career. And I remember rolling my eyes at corporate values the first time I saw them, and because I didn't appreciate the role that values play in intentional design. I always thought they were just the language that you use to ascribe the behavior or to describe the behaviors that are actually happening. But then at some point, I realized values can be aspirational and you can be intentional about what you're trying to create in the world and then describe to yourself, what are the qualities of the environment that are required to bring that new intention into existence? So when we were building today's innovator, we had that conversation over maybe a month or two. What are the qualities of the environment that will allow this system to sustain, right? Systems are either attractive or they're repellent. And repellent ones don't last very long because they just don't attract people. They're unattractive or unstable, I guess is the word. We built for that stability. We built recognizing that you and I would both have pressures we had to build it in such a way that today's innovator could persist in the background of whatever was present in our lives. And, you know, hats off to us. We did it.
We did. I mean, I remember you even, do you remember this exercise that we did where you had your, what do you call it, Aaron? The Venn diagram. You had this Venn diagram of how you were feeling and you were feeling very stuck. This was pre-2020 stuff. I don't know if you remember this, but you were like, I'm not very engaged in my community and I don't know what to do. And we went through things that we taught in corporations. You and I did, and you made the shift to, I need to get involved with local community organizations. I want to start volunteering with nonprofits. I want to get back to my summer camp days. And you just exploded in that way and shifted everything that we were working on and that you were and were not working on to make that a focus. Do you want to talk about how that was for you or that epiphany that you had?
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. I had kind of forgotten about it. I was fortunate at that time to have a coach, even outside of the corporate world, someone that I could bounce things off of who didn't know me very well. And she challenged me. And she challenged me to better articulate what I am and what I'm trying to do. And I came up with that Venn diagram. And I recognized upon reflection, you know, what were in the periods of life where I felt I was thriving, what were the common denominators? And there were three. I was growing. So it was always something that was a little bit challenging, yet I could handle it. I was able to be a thought leader at the same time. So I was able to lead in a learning environment. So everyone's learning. I'm able to still establish myself and my expertise, but recognizing that it's never enough and I need to keep growing. And the third piece was there was always a community, and I'll use the lowercase c, just there was always some connection and community because there were people in it with me. So upon reflection, those were the periods of time I was thriving in my life. And it's not the same for everyone, right? Everyone would have their own Venn diagram, but I think it's a useful exercise to just reflect upon in those times where you felt truly empowered or you felt like you were thriving, what were the common denominators across all of those? And that's when you and I had the conversation, when I put the Venn diagram together, what's in the middle? What are the things where I can still be a thought leader, I can continue to grow, and I can feel a sense of community? And I said before, the book had fallen a little bit flat because the book never had community. It was a one-way conversation. And for me, it fell flat as a result. There was no one kind of rallying around, hey, we're today's innovator, right? There was no hat for being a today's innovator. So that upon reflection, I had to create community. And so the nonprofit space was a little scary. It was outside of my expertise. It wasn't something I'd never invested myself in my community, but through conversations with people like you, I gained that confidence to put myself out there into the nonprofit space The summer camp vector was one where I felt a little comfortable doing that. But very quickly, I was recruited on to be board members for other nonprofits. And I still say yes to this day if it's something that makes me uncomfortable, and I continue to grow. So that's why I still continue to expand into the nonprofit space as a result of those conversations.
You really do say yes to things that make you uncomfortable, because I know you joined a nonprofit of a fourth trimester for women in postpartum care.
Yeah, maternal advocacy and maternal health care. I don't know anything about those subjects. I know that in order for humans and humankind to thrive, that there has to be empathy for people who are struggling. There has to be altruism. So people who are in a privileged position to help need to feel like they can reach out and help. And in some cases, the best thing I can do is help run a better board meeting. And in the case of fourth trimester mommy, you know, that was the role I started with. I was the most tenured nonprofit board member. So I could help structure those things while I learned about the content. But I've grown as a human through being part of these types of experiences and saying yes to things which make me uncomfortable, and recognizing that, you know, casting my vote in November is not enough to change the world. I have to be feet on the ground. I have to be doing the work.
For sure. I think anyone from the organization that you and I started together at that hears that you are on a nonprofit board for a postpartum mothers will see the sheer growth that you have displayed over the last 12 years of your life, because you did not have the reputation for being the most empathetic person. You were very, you can sleep while you die. I don't really care. I remember we sat down and after I got married to Tom and I was like, do you want to hear about it? You're like, not really. And I'm like, I know you don't. Like, let's just move on then. And I think you have grown leaps and bounds, empathetically speaking, as a human, as a leader. I know you can't stand stuff like this, but I am so proud of you, because that is very vulnerable. And you wouldn't be the leader you are without an ounce of empathy. And I'm very proud of you.
Well, thank you. It's a different brand of empathy for sure. And I had to recognize that. To this day, I still don't care. If you tell me about your wedding, if you tell me about how your kids are doing, honestly, I'll forget within 30 minutes. But I know that it means something to people. And that's something that I didn't recognize 15 years ago. I didn't recognize that others needed that attention. They needed an ear. They needed someone to ask questions. And I can do that. Right?
Yes.
I don't have to care to do those things. I don't have to care about what they're talking about to care about them. Right? And so I was able to find my models of empathy and figure out what works for me. And I think that's been a very consistent theme over the last 10 years since I left the corporate world, is creating models for new ways of thinking that serve more than just myself. You know, in the corporate world, my objective was to escape at age 40. I was serving myself. Now I'm serving humankind, and I want to make the world a better place. And that requires a different skill set. And so you've helped me grow in so many ways in that case. But it's still, you know, I still revert to the old patterns and I need to be pulled out every once in a while. But yeah, I've changed. I think we
all do, right? Like it's easy to get stuck or to revert back, and it's hard to continue to grow. So I think going back to the point that got us kind of going down this way was you say yes to things that make you uncomfortable. And that's one way that you continue to grow. And I think that's super admirable. And I love that you're doing. I want to kind of go back to today's innovator, the company, though, and talk about just like how that journey's gone. Like, what did you set out to do? What did we do? What shifts have happened? What hasn't gone well with the company, today's innovator?
Yeah, the first thing I think about with it is just how people react when I say, you know, I'm self-employed. I'm the founder of a company called Today's Innovator. You know, you've never been a full-time employee, to be clear. You've always just kind of helped where help was
right.
needed. So I'm technically a self-employed consultant. But as soon as people put that label on it, oh, are you consulting? I say, no, let's stop there. I'm coaching. I'm training. I'm facilitating so that others can do the work that matters to them. right? I don't care about that business that's hiring me, and I don't care about their problem that much. I care about the people being armed with the skills and perspective and mindset to solve the problem. That's what they hire today's innovator for, is to challenge their thinking, to challenge their being and their doing, not to solve their problems for them. They will own what they create. And so in all of the work that I facilitate, it's about bringing the people who ultimately have to do the work along for that journey, so that they feel like they had a sense of accomplishment, accountability throughout the whole process. So I'm not a consultant. And that's the word I kind of shy away from with today's innovator. It was built differently. It was built as a coaching facilitation, kind of a thinking company.
Yeah. I mean, everything you've brought me in to help with has been strategic planning, forecasting, thinking through the future, or how employees or the organization will change, or how they're about to pivot with things. To your point, coaching. I remember we had one client that, I don't know if you remember this or not, we were talking to them about planning and what they were going to do. And they got very, well, we're going to need an expert brought in. And we're like, you guys are the experts at your company. There's literally no one outside of you that can tell you yes to these things. And that shocked them. And I think that that's so interesting that even people that are at the highest level of expertise within their companies still have imposter syndrome about what they're doing, or they don't know enough about things. Is there anything from that, or just even interactions with clients, that you want to talk about?
You know, I've had that type of epiphany at several times throughout my career as well. I remember one time I was part of a team that was diagnosing the culture of an organization. And we did this exercise of thinking about what is the best case scenario? You know, what culture are we trying to bring into existence? And we kind of put all these great words out there. And then everyone felt like, well, we're going to need consultants to help us get from where we are to where we're going. And then someone in the room stood up and said, wait, everyone who controls the culture is in this room right now. All we have to do is make the choice to change. And this is a very similar type of epiphany, that you don't need that external expert. To borrow a phrase from collective intelligence, the answer is in the room. And
right.
The people and the horsepower is in the room. And sometimes you just need a guide or a coach to take you outside your comfort zone into that zone of growth, to help you, to land soft if you should fall, and to pick you back up and put you right back out there. And so that has been a consistent theme through a lot of the work that I do. And even in all the strategic planning work I do, that is the approach I take, is let's make sure that the folks who ultimately are left to do the transformation are fully bought in. And the best way to do that is to have the ideas and have the strategy come from them.
Yeah. And I think, to your point, right, like, organizations aren't always ready. They're very good at throwing out red tape at people. So I think what we've noticed a lot in our career is that while organizations might not always be ready, individuals are. And I think today's innovators shifted a lot from doing coaching work of organizations and teams to more individual products, which is when we started to launch the workbooks. Do you want to talk about that shift that we made at all, or just how that became important, or where we saw that?
Yeah, I mean, at the high level, you know, the bird's eye view is an organization or a company about innovation needs to eat its own dog food, right? It needs to innovate itself and recognize that adaptivity is such a critical piece of driving change. I like to say, you're not going to wake up 6 months from now and the whole world has changed around you, but you haven't changed. You have to be attentive to all of the change factors that surround you. And that's what we were doing. You know, we were listening, we were probing, we were testing. And as a result, the identity of today's innovator morphed along the way. That's a little bit dangerous because it's this like institutional creep. So it's not always well designed. But I think you and I did a good job at the end of every year to kind of pull up and say, wait a second, let's just reflect on the past year, look forward to the next year before we just allow the drift to happen. Let's make sure that it's happening with intention. And so then we started to really name some of those shifts. Well, let's move from organizational coaching to individuals. Let's move from consulting, you know, solving problems to facilitation and training. And those are very intentional shifts along the way.
Yeah, it felt like a big shift and a big pullback moment for us was after COVID. It felt like organizations that had sustained COVID and gotten through shutdowns and employees not coming in or coming in and how to get through all of that really stopped reaching out more. It felt kind of like they got through that and now they either survived and have figured out how to do this and they don't need us in that capacity anymore, or they had bigger needs evolving and shifting for them. And so that was a big thing that I felt and saw, was that organizations are calling less because they feel like they've overcome this behemoth, if you will, right? But I think there's still this individual, yeah, but it's not fulfilling for me. I'm seeing and hearing from people now that are, well, now we're post-COVID enough and now we have to go in. And, you know, I think a lot of corporations are paying for real estate and now it's like, get back in here. Like, yeah, you have to come back into work. And they're not meeting employees where it's like, well, I appreciate that flexibility. I got to pick up my kids. I got to go do this. And I need to be at home so I can handle these things. And I'm seeing some companies that aren't being super flexible in that way. And I think that that's where or individuals are starting to look for, like, all right, what do I do? Because this isn't going to work for me to continue doing this. Are you seeing that on the East Coast too, or from people in your circles, or?
Absolutely. There were a lot of different phrases that came out during the pandemic. There was, you know, the new normal was one that we heard a lot.
Yes.
And that I always kind of disagreed with that notion that there would be some new future steady state that we're trying to move into, recognizing that the acceleration of the pace of change means that organizational systems or any system has to be built in a way that is dynamic and responsive and nimble. And so the organizations that responded to the pandemic crisis effectively and survived that built that new muscle to be nimble, to be responsive. Where they need help now is with the why, right? So they're able to react, they're able to respond. But are they building the best versions of themselves? And so there's a new problem that's emerging, and that's that these systems have shifted, right? There's this creep to point to something else, but the system wasn't designed to do that thing. And so you get all of these new tensions. You feel like you're a victim within the system. You feel like the change is too much at the individual level because, you know, honestly, the intent of the system was never to do that. And we're seeing complexity emerge, second order effects, unintended consequences of crisis decision making. So you have to do that to move out of the chaotic environment, right? You have to make decisions, but then you have to also stop and say, okay, so how do we reset all of this? And I think that's where a lot of organizations are right now. Their employees are screaming to them saying, hey, it's not good enough. And they're recognizing that they're clinging to old things like real estate and those sorts of things. And so there's this tension that's existing right now. And on top of that, AI's come onto the scene and it's changing the whole world. So systems are under stress right now and they need thinkers. They need people to work with them to figure out what the future looks like.
Yeah. So individuals inside of organizations, right? Like in the past, I've created an innovation program called Entrepreneur Academy. And that's really what that is people that are trying to innovate within an established system. So I feel like that's what you were talking about, Aaron, right?
Yeah, it's a lonely place. The task of an innovator is to achieve results that an organization is not otherwise on track to achieve. And just think about that for a moment, right? It's this magic wand that a CEO often waves and says, we will be innovative. And the reason they say that is because they're not achieving all the things that they know they should be achieving. So the magic wand is innovation. You know, that'll solve it for us. But the reason they're not innovating is often because there's limitations in the corporate system or in the organizational system that they've built. Very rarely is it the people who are the limitation. people have this amazing capacity to learn and to grow and to use resources. Often it's the culture itself, which is holding people back. Sometimes you and I see that creep into the individual's head. They start to think that it's hopeless, that there is no way forward.
Right.
They start to forget what it's like to truly be curious and to truly make offers and to be in that environment where you feel empowered to act and drive change. And that kind of reinforces itself. So once you see one person defeated, an entire team might get defeated by that. And it only takes, you know, one bad manager, one bad experience for that to, again, be doubled down and reinforced again. There's this learned helplessness often inside of organizational systems where you think then your only way out is to innovate. But really, the way out is to intentionally design a new system that is more effective. And so we're helping facilitate that.
Yeah. And we've always told people, like, when you feel that resistance, you know you're doing something because you're up against the status quo when you feel that, right? So you're on the right track if you're feeling that within the organization. I think the question is whether leaders inside that organization are willing and able to do anything with that. You know, I mean, that was what we always saw was the recognition of the need for innovation was always very high.
Yes.
But the what the heck does that mean was always very low. No one knew what does it even mean to innovate. And that's part of the reason that our team was in place was to teach people this is what it means to think innovatively. This is what it means to approach work differently. This is what it means. And that's kind of what's led us to creating these workbooks is because you and I got to the point where it was like, we don't want an organization. We don't want to affect people by waiting for an organization to be like, yeah, I'll pay for you guys to do this. We wanted to be accessible enough that individuals could be like, I need to know what you're talking about and how to do this in my job. And to me, that was where my heart started to get shifted to I want to help people. And I saw that with my last role before today's innovator was the whole reason I created Entrepreneur Academy was like, give me the high potential employees. Give me the people that want to make the place that they work different, better. I want to help them. I want to give them the tools and the resources to do that. And what's kind of funny is what I was noticing is then a lot of the companies were having a hard time sending more people because those people were leaving. And I think like that's where you get to is a place of either getting coached up in the organization or out of the organization. And if you know that it's going to take your boss dying or retiring in 30 years to move up, a lot of times that is really frustrating to be like, I need to go.
Yeah,
and I actually saw that as a success marker that people were being bold enough to be like, this isn't working for me anymore. And I've given this everything I can. And I still am being too limited. And I have my heart set on something different. And I was proud of that because to me, that wasn't just organization sending people. It was people believing in themselves, betting on themselves, and going after what they wanted.
Yeah, and sometimes all it takes is someone like you or me giving them permission and saying...
If you're listening to this right now and you feel stuck and you're ready to be done, you don't have to wait to get fired. You don't have to wait for another COVID to come. You can make a decision today.
Absolutely. In the corporate world, they used to say, don't wait for the direction that'll never come.
You were always quoted with that.
Yeah, you'll be left there waiting forever.
Yes.
And it, particularly when it comes to your own development, your own growth, no one's going to take more interest in that than you are. So don't wait for someone to tell you to go to a training, particularly now that we have these AI tools where you can just have a late night chat about anything within AI and you can learn new things. But that was always available to you. It was always just a choice. Do I want to learn new things? Do I want to push on my own individual boundaries, or am I going to be defeated by the system I'm in and follow and stay in my lane? And sometimes it's more comfortable to stay in your lane. And we've met a lot of people who are very talented, who are very comfortable staying in their lane. And we, you know, we're the ones trying to get them out of that. That's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. I know you're very excited about talking about AI. Aaron's the futurist. I'm the barefoot in the garden person. I want to just keep you here for one more second, Aaron, because when you were talking about leaving corporate America at 40 and even like right here where we are in the conversation, right? Like people that are feeling the grind, they're over it. And I remember when you just said earlier in this interview, yeah, the first thing you did was you set a vision. We actually created a tool, a workbook about this, Quest. And this was the product of you coaching people for over 2.5 years. I think you coached 12 people about wasn't it a 2-year journey for some of them?
Yeah.
And then we've kind of distilled it down, that journey and those exercises that you did across all the people that you coached over 2 years into this acronym Quest. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have this horrible habit of overcomplicating things. And so in the beginning, I had all of this technical language. You'll probably remember this. It was called Align for Design.
Yes.
And I put design thinking at the front of this and said, hey, as an individual, I'm going to teach you how to design your life. You know, that message is great. But then when I got into the tools, I saw people's eyes kind of gloss over and they didn't actually know what they were doing. And then as we worked on generalizing the lessons from all these coaching engagements that I had, you helped me realize that we had to make it clear for the person being coached. You know, we had to meet them where they were in their language, in simple language. The underpinning could still be design thinking and systems thinking. And sure enough, that's what it is. The Quest book is built on best practices for driving meaningful change in systems. But it doesn't use that language. And that's, I think, the beauty of it. We ended up using this acronym Quest, right? Question, understand, explore, solve, transform. When you look at it now, it is so obvious that that's what the acronym should have been all along.
Mm-hmm.
But what's funny is how long it took for you and me to get there. We were playing around with words that didn't even make sense as the acronyms,
right.
And we were fine with it, right? We were saying, well, that's better than what it was. And then eventually, I don't remember what the epiphany moment was, but we landed on Quest, and it was, you know, 5 steps instead of 8. And it was a
yes.
word that invoked imagery, and it suddenly unlocked the whole workbook. And that's, when I look back on all the things I've written, that's the one I'm most proud of. And you were such a big part of translating that to something that people would want to work through, to make it interesting to them. And it's not systems thinking, it's not design thinking, it's introspection, and it's asking yourself hard questions. I'm really proud of that one.
It's great. And I think that the reason we got there with Quest was because before that, we finished Guide, your facilitation guide. And it was through my training as a facilitator that made me realize what was important to you was baking in the design systems, right? And that's in there. But as a facilitator, what I've always held on to is sometimes people don't need to know how and why you're doing what you're doing. They just need help getting to where they're going. And for me, that was kind of how we were working through that was people that are using Quest don't necessarily. Now, there are a large amount of people in the corporate space that definitely want to understand what design thinking is for sure. But not everybody that is on their Quest awaits needs or wants to understand design thinking. They just really want to figure out what is next for them. And that's what's beautiful about Quest is it really helps you figure out what is next for you. How do you want to get where you're going? And I mean, we have had people that have started companies because of Quest, that have quit their jobs and pursued their dreams because of Quest. And I think that is just such a beautiful thing. And yeah, I think it is one of the things that I'm the most proud of too with today's innovator. And I think it's one of the products that has changed more people's lives that we have touched than just a really great, impactful meeting.
Yeah. And sometimes it doesn't have to be a radical change either. It can just be you work through it all and you recognize that you're where you're supposed to be right now. And it's for a reason. You know, you're working towards something and it just gives you a fresh perspective. Sometimes it's just as simple, like we talked about earlier, as setting that vision of the future and having someone or some, in this case, a resource to help you articulate what that vision is. So it doesn't have to be you're going to leave your corporate seat and go start a new company. It can be just a recognition that I'm where I need to be right now, but there's these other things I should be working on. That's what's so powerful about it is it can facilitate that massive transformation, but it can also facilitate just small incremental tweaks.
Absolutely. Both Quest and Guide, Becoming Today's Innovator, and the book Today's Innovator can all be found in the show notes. If you're just curious what we're talking about, you want to pop over, they're in the show notes at the end whenever you want to check them out. Aaron, I know you're dying to talk about it. Tell us what you're up to now, because it's not anything that we've been talking about. It's very different.
Yeah. It's aligned. So it's not. It's
it
not
is
outside.
Aligned. It's always aligned, right? Like, I think that's the thing. Between you and me, all of our differences and all the pivots and twists and turns that today's innovator have, I always think to, why do we keep coming back together and why do we keep doing the things we do? And it is because it is aligned. It is because we care deeply about helping people be better. We care deeply about helping organizations see people and be better. We care deeply about where the world's going and how it's turning. So that to me is this consistency that's like, everything else can be different and twist and turn and move, but that underlying theme is huge. And that's why we keep doing all these things together. And they're so different, or they feel different, I think, to people that don't completely see and understand.
Yeah. But to answer your question, in November of 2022, I saw a news article that ChatGPT was released to the world. And like everyone else, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what the acronym stood for. But I'm a little bit
of what does it stand for?
Generative pre-trained transformer. It's an acronym you don't need to ever know what it stands for. So it doesn't matter. It's a horrible name for a product. And that product alone did not change the world, because there was a lot of products being worked on that one of them would have come out eventually. But AI and artificial intelligence, which is what ChatGPT is, as we all know, has changed the world since November of 2022. I saw this immediate opportunity to leverage generative artificial intelligence to make the world a better place. I was already connected to all of these nonprofits and recognizing how easy it is to now have access to answers. You know, all of the world's information, if you just know how to ask, can level the playing field for these organizations that are under-resourced. They're trying to solve the world's most important challenges. So I'm thinking nonprofits and academia and government-type institutions, which are very set in their ways. They're very under-resourced. But now they have this new tool. And so immediately I started to put together trainings for prompt engineering, for understanding what AI is. And in the process, like I described before with making offers, I kind of made an offer to myself. I'm going to move into that space. And now, in the last 2 years, 2.5 years, everything I'm working on has changed. And I think every week right now for the next several months, I'm doing a talk on artificial intelligence. And it's not the back end stuff. It's not the technical stuff. It's the user oriented things. So what's possible with artificial intelligence, and how do you use it as an amplifier or as a supplement or as a co-creator or co-intelligence to help you perform better in your life? So I'm still making sense of where this is going, and I don't know that I'll ever have a deep appreciation or deep understanding of what the end game is, because the world's changing so quickly. The best I can do is stay on the wave, and it's everything I can do to stay on the wave and to help others get on the wave as well. No one is ahead of AI, and you'll never be ahead of it. The pace of change is too rapid now. The best we can do is learn to lead and live with artificial intelligence. And if you ignore it, you're going to fall behind. And I know that's not a message that everyone wants to hear, but it kind of is the reality. Things are just changing so fast now that if you're not using AI in the professional domain, at the very least, you're going to fall behind. And I love to see how you started to use it in your family life and recognizing that it's such a powerful tool to shape your cultural systems. When it was released to the world, OpenAI didn't know what the potential of a large language model was. But the users, the billions of users of ChatGPT and large language models, have started to figure it out, and we're starting to see the potential to affect systems in a positive way. And I want to help continue to push this all in a positive direction.
Yeah. I mean, this is very much aligned with the Today's Innovator book, right? Like, we're getting to the meat of it, and it's the end of the episode, where I will definitely be bringing you back to talk more about AI, because I think no one truly understands how powerful it is, all the things that you can do with it. To your point, I did just recently start using it. And you know that I was a monster resistor of all things AI for a very long time, specifically in 2022. Like, I stopped posting online almost completely because I was so creeped out by it. And I still feel that way, but I am also at the point of motherhood and just being creative and having all these ideas that it's like, if I can help you, if I can use AI as a tool and not as a brain and just use it to help me get my ideas done faster, then I am all about that. And I think it is safe to say that, like, Wildly Intentional would not have been able to launch in 30 days if I didn't use it, because it has helped me a lot, like flush out the idea and brainstorm ideas and names and just all of the things. And I need that at 9 p.m. when I finally get my alone time to sit down and think by myself. My brain is already fried. And so I need to be able to have something that can help me through that. And so, yeah, I've begrudgingly adopted using it. And I would say probably in like the least amount possible. But I think that was also huge for me because I'm homeschooling. And so I can't homeschool kids and have them be completely nature-based and not abreast with what's going on in the pace of the world, because they will be left behind and that will be impacting them. And so I'm still trying to figure out how that will look for them. I have no idea completely, because to your point, it changes so much. So I think both homeschooling with AI is another episode, Aaron, and I think the pace of AI and how can we still be human with AI? I think these
I love those questions. Yeah.
Okay. Definitely other episodes that we need to expand in. Anything else that you think is worth noting about our journey together or today's innovator and how it's evolved, or just our corporate journeys?
Well, I always appreciate reflecting upon it just in talking through it in the last hour or so. I kind of revisited some lessons, or some older lessons have been re-impressed within me. So I appreciate, you know, the opportunity to join you here and talk through.
It's fun. I think we've taken, if you will, like non-traditional paths. And I think that is empowering to show people that it's okay to do that. And whether you have a super clear vision like Aaron, where you know you're not going to be doing this at 40, or a more, I don't necessarily know what I'm doing, but I know it's not this, like me, and your priorities shift. And I mean, I think for me, Aaron, the biggest thing was coaching people over the last 10, 12 years and seeing people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s loving to hate where they work, or hate their manager, or hate their company, or just hate all of it, but deeply committed to it. Like, yeah, I've been here for 26 years and I've hated every second of it, you know? And it's like, ah. And then going home to my kids and seeing them and being like, I don't want you to wait until you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s to start learning how to question the system. Like, if I'm honestly gonna, to your point, eat our own dog food, I need to be teaching my kids this at a young age. Because, and I mean, that's honestly a very hard route to go with parenting, is like, I don't say because I said so, right? Which you hear in organizations a lot. I'm open to being challenged. And that is 100% a more exhausting route to take while parenting. But they shift my thinking on things all the time. And they also like help me see that that is just an arbitrary thing that I made up. Like, it doesn't actually need to be upheld. And you had a compelling argument against it. And yeah, I'll get behind that. I don't need a hard boundary or line there, right? And that has been fun for me to step into that. So like you saying yes to different nonprofits than you would in growing in that way, I think living this with my kids and seeing and letting kids challenge me and my thinking has helped me grow in a lot of ways. And I wouldn't be doing that if I was gung-ho sticking to my corporate path. And I also don't regret leaving corporate America at all, like at all.
Yep, same. And I know more growth is coming for both of us. But, you know, we're not done in our pursuits. And I expect that we'll both play a part in each other's next chapters as well. And I look forward to figuring it out with you.
Same, Aaron. Well, I just want to thank you so much for being here, for being so open, and for sharing your story. And to those of you listening, thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for tuning into another episode, for thinking deeply, for questioning boldly, and choosing to live with more intention, because that choice ripples. If you want to dive deeper, head over to the show notes at wildlyintentional.com for links, Aaron's information, and resources from today's episode. There, you can check out all the books and the workbooks that Aaron and I have mentioned and published over the years. You can find the link in the show notes or go to wildlyintentional.com/tools. This episode is sponsored by Today's Innovator, the company that Aaron and I co-founded to bring powerful innovation tools to real people like you. Whether you're leading a team or leading a family, you can learn more at todaysinnovator.com. If this episode gave you a light bulb moment, pass it on. Text it to your colleague, your partner, the friend who's craving change. If this episode gave you something different to think about, hit subscribe so you don't miss what's next. This is how we shift culture. One question, one ripple, one bold idea at a time. Before you go, next week, I'm shifting gears a bit. I'm sitting down with a mom I met at a strawberry patch in 90-degree heat with a toddler melting down and a baby in her arms. I bought her strawberries, and I sent her to the car to nurse while I stood in line. She found me again 6 years later at swimming lessons and told me that moment changed her. So we're going to talk about that next week. Moms helping moms in public. Little acts of kindness that can remind us that we're not alone. It's real, it's raw, and it might just make you rethink what it means to be a part of a village. Don't miss it. This is Mandy signing off. Until next time, stay rooted, be brave, and live wildly intentionally.